powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Here we go now.
Not a ton of winning to start the season for the Mariners, so let's have some fun with this one. What was the most encouraging thing from last night's Mariners win? Join this conversation with Bump and myself on the Mac and Jacks text line. Text now, 866-979-3776. Bump, happy Tuesday. What was, for you, the most encouraging thing? You have so many choices.
Happy Tuesday, Stacy. You know what Tuesday is. It's Till Tuesday. Love the till you're
That's
wearing,
right.
huh?
That's
Love
right.
Love the you till that you have
say,
on.
You guys say this every That's single right. time until we're on air.
But I give each other
oh,
the look.
Man. Yep. Can I say something?
Hey, you give the old man nod with tight lips.
That's so rude. Can I say, it's not even a bit anymore when I forget. I remember I said last week I would remember, and I felt so proud of myself for remembering. I wrote a reminder in my phone. Wow.
Yeah, it's all right.
I mean, you are wearing a Mariners crew neck.
I'm wearing a Mariners.
You can't see it.
Unfortunately,
so
it's a
well
throwback.
On the stream.
It's like the Sunday throwback color.
It's the royal blue and gold. Yeah.
Well,
it's not teal.
This is unfortunate. I need to own more than one teal item of clothing.
Well, and they won yesterday too, Stacey. Like, if there was ever a day to celebrate Teal Tuesday, it'd be coming off a win.
Apologize, and yet I take no accountability, and I will not do so if they lose today. That's not my fault. I didn't do that.
Typical. You know my wife did yesterday?
What?
We have, you've seen my chargers with my name on it.
Yes.
Mine says dad's, hers says mom's, and everyone has their own charger because people like to steal chargers, right? So she couldn't find hers, and she had someone else's charger, had my son's charger. And then she goes, no, well, it's not my fault. It was in my room, so I had to use it. I go, that's fine, but just say that you were using his charger. Well, no, I'm not. Technically, I didn't use it. Well, I'm sorry, but it shouldn't have been there. That's pretty much what you just did. But it's fine. It's fine. It's fine.
I'm sorry.
All right, let's get back to the Mariners. What was my favorite part?
Your most encouraging thing.
Encouraging.
That you saw. Most encouraging thing. It could be the same.
But it was that first inning, honestly.
Yeah.
You come out, you got a walk by JP. You got a walk by Julio. Polanco goes yard. You get a walk by Haniger. They put up three runs in the first inning. Before that game, they had two runs in all the first innings in the season so far. So that was encouraging that, okay, let's get off to a good start. Yes, Montas was not on his game. One of the better pitchers in the league was not on his game, but you had smart at-bats. Guys were patient to start, and Polanco, after this first inning, he's recognizing pitches. He's all over stuff right now, so you're starting to see the potential, but that first inning was encouraging, and with Kirby as well.
Let's talk about Jorge Polanco. His three-run home run in the first.
Runners their leads, and now the 3-1 pitch of Polanco, swinging a drive deep to right field. Fraley going back, looking up, goodbye baseball, line shot home run, Jorge indeed. The Mariners 1-for-1 with runners in scoring position, and the Mariners have just bolted out to a 3-0 lead here in the bottom of the first. Everybody on their feet here at T-Mobile Park already.
Now, my answer also encompasses the first inning, but what was most encouraging to me, Bump, was the contributions from new additions to the team. I am cheating. I'm counting Mitch Haniger as one of these, but that's fine. One of the conversations we've been having about this team is not only do you need to see something from the nucleus, from Julio, from JP, you also really want to feel like this transition that you made from striking out a ton but hitting for power to making a lot of contact pays off. You had been getting neither power nor hitting for a lot of contact and getting on base. You got both last night, including two multi-run home runs, both from guys that you signed, added, or traded for in the offseason. With Jorge Polanco, he went 1-for-3. Two of those were walks, though, and obviously a 3-run home run. Mitch Haniger with a 2-run home run. These are, and you know what? I'll throw in Luke Rayleigh's triple as well, extra base hit there. Like, these are things that you want to feel like the moves that you made to make your team better are paying off. And they did yesterday. It was nice.
Yeah, they did. You mentioned Polanco doing his thing. Haniger did his thing. You know what I like, too? I like Luke going in there and laying down a bunt, too. Lay down a bunt, move the base runners over. Played some small ball as well. We saw a little bit of everything. And then, of course, we're going to highlight the young man. Kalase comes in and contributes right off the bat. After seeing his first 2-3 at-bats, you saw, you're like, he might get a hold of one. I mean, this guy is all over these pitches. And he seemed so calm in the box, too. It wasn't like he was flustered or rattled. Then the postgame interview with Jim Mueller just affirmed that stuff. No, I love what I saw. And big ups to George Kirby, man. He tried, the word on the street is at least, he tried a new grip on one of his pitches to turn it really into like a sweeper. And I'm telling you, adjustments like that are tough. Now, I've never been a pitcher. I don't have a gas like that. But adjusting any part of your game, something you've done for a long time, adjusting it real quick, getting into the game and doing it and executing it, it's harder to do than people could imagine. Yes, he is a professional, one of the best pitchers in the game, but it's still hard to do. You have to believe in it. So to see, like you mentioned, the guys that that needs to contribute. To see Class A come up and contribute first time in the show, and to see George really expand the strike zone, right? The thing about George is that he's going to throw strikes, and teams know that. So they're going to swing a lot at all his pitches. So to see him calm himself down, man, he's throwing them in the dirt. He has them rise up outside the strike zone. I like it because the scouting report is out on him. Guarantee you they went in that game saying, be ready to swing, because George is going to lace him up there. He did throw some strikes, obviously, but I just loved his command, his approach, his adjustments, and then the bats were hot, too.
Loved the answers, too, of where to start, that it came from two different spots. Most encouraged by you, the first inning, and George Kirby, me, Jorge Polanco. Two Jorges, Jorge Kirby and Jorge Polanco, both with really strong games. And then you've got.
I see what you did there.
Thank you. From the 602 in Arizona, they said the Class A hit in RBI, which was really fun. Let's take a listen.
The 1-2. Swinging a ground ball with some eyes through the left side for a base hit. Ty France scores from third. Jonathan Class A in his first big league game picks up his first major league hit, and he drives in a run. It's 6-2 Mariners.
602 also says this, though. Julio's hit and stolen base. Yes, I'm going to throw in Julio walking in the first.
Yeah.
I was genuinely, I was having a conversation with someone about how at this rate, I would love for Julio to have two home runs in a game. But what I would also love is just a good patient at bat.
Yep.
Get a walk. And he got on base, bottom of the first, right there. Obviously, one of the runs knocked in. Fantastic start for him. That's the kind of thing I wanted to see.
Yeah, it's important that you saw that too, because what do we expect guys to do when they're not having the success? Start chasing, start pressing. And he didn't do that. Didn't have a great day, right? A little blooper out there. He got on first base, but so what? It still counts. He got on base, and then he stole second. It was a complete game for Julio. He was nice in the outfield. Nothing got by him over there. He looked fast and crisp. No, this was a step in the right direction for our guy, Julio. Another thing that I liked was what, 4, 5, you know, the bats kind of calmed down a little bit. Then they pick back up 6, 7. It was like you, in a game, you go through waves of success, waves of failure, waves of momentum. You got it. Now they got it. Now I don't think the Reds ever got momentum, but the basses weren't firing for a little bit, but then they got right back to it. They stayed the course, man. And that's what good teams have to do to win ball games. You're not going to go 9 innings very often where things are just popping every single inning. You're driving in runs. You're getting on base. That'd be nice, but that's not reality. So to see them kind of go through the phase of just a typical game and come out hot, get a little cold, finish hot.
Yep.
I love to see it. And then big ups to the bullpen as well. I think who was it? Spire who came out first pitch? Boom, yard. But you know what? He calmed himself down, stayed in there, and finished the job.
Speaking of going through the ebbs and flows of a game, they've also been going through the ebbs and flows of the start to the season. And me and you and many, many fans might have been like, ooh, I don't love what I'm seeing so far. Mitch Haniger said post-game he hasn't been worried too much, and here's why.
I'm pretty happy with how guys have come to work every day and you know, worked hard and not – you don't see guys hanging their heads and sulking. It's been like, all right, we're not doing well. Let's work hard and improve and keep fighting every night. And, you know, since I've been here, we haven't had too many just, like, fantastic starts. And I was telling the guys in there, I was like – the best start we've ever had when I was here, we were 13-3 and it was a 19 and that was the worst team I've been on. So it's like, it's a long season. Don't worry. You're going to have a bad 2 weeks.
Okay. I'll say this, Mitch, it was a fun start to the season. I really enjoyed the first 2 weeks of that season.
Man.
It was amazing. I'll never forget it. And then it was god awful. And then it was horrible. What'd you say?
And Daniel Vogelback was your all-star.
That's the best way to summarize that.
No disrespect to Daniel Vogelback.
No disrespect to Vogie.
Is he with Toronto now, huh? We saw him.
Yeah. He is.
Yeah.
They got Vogie and Alejandro Kirk, which I love as a duo.
I do.
Some stuff to take from this. Obviously, you and I both talked about what was encouraging. Let's take a listen to what Scott Servais felt was encouraging after this one. For him, it's about player adjustments.
They're listening. They're trying to make adjustments. Some guys can make them quicker than others. George is one that can make adjustments extremely quick. That's why he's one of the premier pitchers, young pitchers in the league, because he can make adjustments like that. He switched the grip on a slider tonight, went out and took it in the game. It was pretty effective. He found something he could get to land in the dirt once in a while and get him to chase. He needs to have that, along with running the fastball inside. It should not be a comfortable at bat against George Kirby.
Meanwhile, he said the league's all about results, but you have to go through the process.
Well, results are great, no doubt. We're in the big leagues. That's what it's about. But you got to go through the process the right way. And process-wise tonight, we did the right things. We swung at the right pitches. We didn't try to overcook anything. We took, we got a sac fly. We hit balls in the middle of the field.
Is that what you saw when you watched this game? Like, they're going through, they're doing the right things. We joked over the course of the first week and a half, just play baseball.
Yeah, just play ball.
I would say they played some baseball.
Defensively on point.
Yeah.
On the mound on point. For the most part, in the batter's box, you were on point. Now, you can't expect these guys to come out and win a game 9-3 every single day, right? But you can expect some type of performance near this level. And here's the messed up part about me. Here's the dad in me, Stacey.
Yeah.
I'm watching this all go down, and it's like when my son, he has a good game. I'm like, ooh, he was on fire. I'm like, can you do it tomorrow, though? Like, can this be you? You have to make this a part of you. That is the journey I'm on with my son right now, is that he's doing great things. He's in such a good place mentally playing his games. But I'm like, this got to be you, dog. This can't be, okay, this is a little bump on a Tuesday, and then he don't show up until next Tuesday. Mm-hmm. So that's my next step. But, yes, you need to see some stuff like this. You need to see Julio be smart. The only downfall or the worst part about this game was that JP didn't look like JP, even though he did walk the first inning, did get on base.
But it's a fair point.
Yeah, but JP didn't look like JP. Everybody else did what they're supposed to do. But that's what a team sport is. When a couple guys are struggling, other guys pick up the slack. And for the most part, everybody did that. And I love seeing Big Rayleigh get that triple, man. He looked like a toddler running through the house without his diaper on, rounding those bases, man. I love to see it.
I need to issue a correction. The 4-2-5. The 2-5-3 said, Vogie's with the Mets. Come on, C-Raj. I expected more from you, C-Raj.
Is he?
No, he's with the Blue Jays.
We just saw him with the Blue Jays.
Well, you better get in a fight with this texter. Oh, the texter corrected himself. Yeah. He said, bad, LOL.
King, you best not miss.
I will say this. Curtis knows everything, and also, secondarily, you were right to lower the bar for me. Please only be disappointed that Curtis doesn't know. Okay, you guys, we are going to stick with the Mariners for the first part of this hour. We've got the latest from Jeff Passan. He shot down a fan theory about this team that I heard yesterday on Brock and Salk. They asked him about it this morning. Really interesting sound. We've also got a new drafting Seahawks profile, taking a look at two possible quarterback additions for Seattle. Before we get to any of it, let's get to Headline Rewrites.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Headline Rewrites.
We must make headlines.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Bump and Stacy.
Headline, 425, by the way, before we get to headlines, they say, Link Stacy and I don't like teal in a Curtis mocking voice.
That's so rude.
That's correct, 425.
You guys, this is what bothered. I got here early today. Either of you could have said something. Okay, Bump, no. Curtis, you could have said something, but you waited for Bump to get in here so that you could exchange glances, exchange knowing looks with him. You guys were basically talking trash silently to each other in front of me.
No, but, we brought it to light in front of you, though.
A listener has already sent me in a picture of her in her car wearing teal. And shame on me.
Well, Stacey,
you had the right idea. You followed through, and I didn't.
You have
I let you down, too.
You have a sweater. Didn't last year somebody send you a glove, too?
Someone did send me a glove. I had the hat, but the hat was too big.
You have more teal than both of us.
No, the hat was too big for me, so I donated it. It made me look like a bobblehead. And my head's already too big for my body. It was just a bad look. And so I have the teal sweatshirt, but I just regularly forget. I need to buy more teal. That's the problem.
Right.
The problem is I'm going to add to my Amazon cart right now. That's the problem. I need to add some stuff to my Amazon cart, and I'm going to do it right now. Thank you for reminding me.
Headline number one, Iowa star Caitlin Clark was the number one overall pick in last night's WNBA draft. What's the real headline?
Congratulations to Clark for being the least surprising pick ever. A counter to Malcolm Butler, winner of the most surprising pick ever.
That's good work right there, Stacey. That's good work. Yeah, big ups, Clark. Everyone knew it was going to go down. The Indiana Fever had a draft party. 17,000 people showed up. That is a Caitlin Clark effect. Another Caitlin Clark effect. I'm on the couch laying down, catching a 10-15 minute nap real quick. My daughter wakes me up like, Dad, the draft is on. She's 10 years old. How you know when the draft is on? Don't you just watch YouTube and stuff like that? It's cool, man. And I would love to see the viewership numbers for the draft, because I know that's the first time, second or third time, but the longest I've ever watched a WNBA draft. And it's because of Caitlin Clark. It's because of Angel Reese, young lady from South Carolina, Cameron Brink.
Crushing it with the dress, too.
And
Angel crushed it with the outfit.
The fit games were on point. NFL, y'all better step your game up. These ladies look good last night.
Let me tell you what. So many of these athletes were looking amazing. Angel Reese, I was like, stop, but in a good way. Cameron Brink looked absolutely gorgeous. Those two were my favorite, and I saw them in photos together, so it worked out.
I like Alisa,
Caitlin
too.
Had a cute little crop situation going on.
The young lady from Utah, Alisa.
Yeah.
With the tribal tats everywhere. Yeah. It was on point.
Angel and Cameron, though, have my outfit win for the day.
A lot of draft analysts compared this class. I mean, they haven't even played a game yet in the WNBA. They were comparing it to like the 03 NBA draft class with LeBron, Carmelo, D-Wade, Chris Bosh.
Yeah.
Like, that's some pretty lofty praise. And, I mean, it makes sense. Angel Reese went, what, 7th overall?
Yeah.
And she's a household name. Uh-huh.
Can I ask a controversial question?
Sure.
So, going around after Caitlin Clark was drafted was the salary that she'll be making, not just over four years, but each per year, around 70-something thousand in each of these, right? Which is, I think, a salary that surprised a lot of people. I saw some people saying, great, like, put this salary out here because not a lot of people know what WNBA players make. Mm-hmm. Some people are shocked by that. Other people think, well, you don't make a lot of revenue, so whatever. But then I saw some people saying that putting out the salary that, like, Caitlin is going to make is mocking players.
No, it's not. It's not. It's bringing awareness to how underpaid that she is.
I think so, too.
I'm not saying she should get $15 million a year because it's business, right? The dollars have to make sense. But everything that I've seen is that the WNBA pulls in around $180 to $200 million a year. You can afford to at least pay this young lady $150,000 a year. That's why they go overseas to Russia and all these European countries, because they get paid more over there. Again, I understand the business part of it. You can't overpay someone, but that seems to be an underpay.
I agree. And I agree with you that I don't think it's making a mockery. I don't think it's misogynistic or meant to, like, insult these women. If you see that and you do insult them, I think you're weird, because they're doing something really amazing, living out their dreams, and I'm sure much better at this sport than you ever will be. But I think that it's meant to just... There are a lot of people that had no idea about the salary. I didn't know exactly what the salary would be for Caitlin Clark, and I was surprised when I saw it, even knowing that WNBA players have tried to advocate for more earnings.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number two, former Seahawks punter John Ryan is returning to Seattle to sign a one-day contract to retire with the team. What's the real headline?
You're telling me for the past 6 years John Ryan hasn't been retired?
That's what I'm saying.
Hang on a minute.
He's been active on Twitter. That's for sure.
How far removed do you have to get from your playing days to where you can sign a one-day
contract?
Like,
there's no statute of limitations on when you can retire. You can be like, I'm officially retiring.
I'm not retired. I haven't signed papers.
We have a free agent wide receiver on the show.
What's good? Y'all need a
rep. Receiver Michael Bumpus.
Can someone create, please, a Wikipedia page for Michael Bumpus and add a current NFL free agent and radio host?
Hey, holla at me. You know? That's why I left the door open, just in case you need a rep or two. I got you.
You never know. You never know.
It reminds me of, I believe, anybody can declare for, like, the NBA draft or the NFL draft if you have basically gone if you're 3 years removed from high school in the NFL or 1 year removed from high school in the NBA. Like, you can fill out the paperwork and they will send you back an email saying, like, congratulations, you're now in the pool to be selected. even though
I didn't know they had the requirements of an online school.
It's basically like getting ordained online.
Yeah,
you just have to fill out some information.
You want, or like, I am nervous with how many of my friends have become qualified online very quickly to drive boats. I'm sorry, you got your boating license? And you what? Yesterday?
Headline rewrite.
Headline number three. Maybe the most outspoken against the LIV Tour, Rory McIlroy's agent denied rumors today that his client has received an $850 million offer to join the tour. What's the real headline?
This might be fake news, but it's real money, Rory.
Man, he got some type of offer, that's for sure. They definitely approached him. And, I mean, look, Rory has, he's made his bet. He is PGA for life. He's been in front of this whole thing saying, look, he's ashamed that guys are making a move. Now he's back in front of the spotlight saying, maybe we should come together. It's getting a little gray what's really going on. But I do not think that Rory didn't get an offer. And I don't think that he didn't pick up the phone and listen to that offer, because you got to see what people think you're worth. You got to at least listen, even if you know you're not going to do it. So $850 million, maybe, maybe not, but he definitely got an offer.
Okay. A couple corrections. Someone pointing out that John Ryan, everyone loves John Ryan. Playful ribbing. Played for 2 years in his hometown in Canada after leaving. I also need to give a shout out for my reality TV brethren that his wife has an amazing podcast about Married at First Sight that I do listen
John
to
Ryan,
weekly.
John Ryan?
Sarah Colonna. Okay. She has a podcast. Married at First Sight is not a popular reality show, but it is in the catalog of shows that I watch.
It is in my house.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you guys watch this season?
Yep. No, actually, you know what? I set this one out. You know who watched it with my wife? Little Michael.
Aww.
He got into it. I go, bro, be careful. Be careful.
The Married at First Sight is, you know what? I'm going to stop myself. We will.
We're right up against the break.
We will discuss during the break. I simply will continue this conversation for many minutes, but I won't subject you guys to it. You're listening to Bump and Stacey on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app. Jeff Passan shot down a fan theory about the Mariners. That's coming up next.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost.
Coming up in 15 minutes, do you go offense or defense at pick number 16? We've been debating, so we'll visit that conversation before we get to it. The latest from MLB expert Jeff Passan, an MLB insider for ESPN. There's a fan theory about the Mariners, and I guess I shouldn't limit it to a fan theory. I think this is something many people have wondered about many teams, not just Seattle, but whether there's an over-reliance on analytics at times, or whether that over-reliance on analytics can get in the heads of players. And when you start struggling, and when you start overthinking, and when you start trying and forcing, are the analytics part of that? So Jeff Passan was asked. This is his response.
Tell me you don't know baseball without telling me you don't know baseball. I mean, come on. It's like, it's so easy to sit here and make numbers a boogeyman when things aren't going right. But when things are going right, as they have for the last couple of seasons, are numbers suddenly just like a small part of it? I mean, at very least, if you're going to be intellectually dishonest, be consistent in your intellectual dishonesty.
I'm going to start saying as an insult to people, be consistent with your intellectual dishonesty.
You know, I really appreciate that take, though.
Yeah.
Because especially in baseball, we cover everything, football, basketball, baseball, hockey. But in baseball, those data nerds will come at you, well, you don't know what this war is and all these other stuff. And I go, all right, but I know what I'm seeing. I know that Julio is a great athlete, and eventually he's going to catch on. Mm-hmm. I know that I believe Polanco. You see Polanco and you go, all right, I see his ability. Maybe eventually he's going to catch on. But then you have the numbers to kind of support that. But I also can disagree and say that what are people supposed to look at then when things aren't going wrong if they've never played the sport? Just because they never played the sport doesn't necessarily mean they don't know the sport. So if they don't understand what they're seeing, they go to the numbers, that's part of the game as well. The tricky part about baseball is there's 162 of them things. So the numbers are going to be skewed Extremely. Like, I'm even looking at like Mookie Betts' numbers right now. I go, man, this dude is playing at another level. Is he going to play at this level for 162? I promise you he's not going to do that. But when things are going well, you do look at the numbers. You do look at the player, or you ignore the numbers when things are going well. When things are going bad, people search for a reason. Mm-hmm. They're trying to figure out what's going on. What do you have? You have the visual. You watch the games. You're seeing these guys strike out. You're seeing the defense play horribly. You're seeing some of these pitchers get lit up. And the numbers are going to support exactly that. So I get passing. Passing on another level when it comes to this baseball stuff.
Right.
And he covers every single team. He's been in the game for a while. He knows to be composed when it comes to passing judgment about these teams. But to completely ignore the numbers would be ignorant, I think. But to simply rely on the numbers would be the same thing. So there's a balance that needs to be there. So yeah, I can agree with him, but I can also see where fans would lean on the numbers because they're trying to figure out, why is this happening? What do they need to get better at?
Can I give you a horrible analogy, but it's one that just kind of came to mind as you were talking about, like, there's a balancing act between, like, just having that information and not. It reminds me of when I was a little bit younger and my stepdad would absolutely refuse to look at directions, and maybe other people's dads did this, who can say? My stepdad refused to look up directions, was convinced that anywhere he went, he knew exactly where he was going. If you're listening, I love you. He's not. But it kind of reminds me of, like, that's how analytics, you're driving the car. If you're the player. There's nothing wrong with having more information. There is nothing bad about more information. And more information has made people better hitters, has made pitchers better pitchers.
Mm-hmm.
It has made baseball teams wildly successful. It is part of what got the Astros to so many World Series appearances, that and cheating. But analytics are part of that, and having a pretty cutthroat front office who drafted and developed exceptionally well. To me, it's kind of like that directions thing. You can use it. It's there for you. It's not going to ruin your game. Like, you aren't, you know, Pops, less of a man if you look at directions. You know what I mean? And so I wonder if people worry that if a team like the Mariners has a lot of hitters that are struggling. Well, maybe they're overthinking it, and maybe they are, but I don't think it's because there's useful information there if they want it. Now, as far as what goes on behind the scenes and, you know, and all of that stuff, I don't know. I don't know what's playing into the mental side of why a bunch of players are struggling, but I don't think more analytics in baseball is necessarily a problem. I would be interested in talking to an actual player about, like, do you feel like it hinders you? Do you feel like it holds you back?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, football analytics are different, but even with any of the former players on our station, like, analytics were just either didn't exist or were very different. So it's hard to tell, like, how much really played into anything.
Isn't passing the one that's pointed out a couple of stats and said,
about,
well, these
pitchers?
Stats are telling us,
yes.
No, not about pitchers, about just where this Mariners team is going,
mm-hmm.
that they're trending in the right direction, that they're eventually going to get things going. I think it was passing. We played this cut maybe last week. So in the same way passing is saying, look, don't rely on the data, he also used the data to tell everybody that everything's going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so here's the thing, man. When there are some people you talk to who see the game differently, right? The best conversations I have in football is when I'm sitting there talking football with Ray Roberts, with Paul Moyer, with Jordan Babineau, with Brian Walters, with Marcus Trufant.
Just players.
Guys who just know this game.
Yep.
And we could be looking at, we won't even talk about the stat. We're talking about what we're seeing, what this left guard is doing, what that safety is doing, what the quarterback is doing. And the conversation goes to a place where probably the average person wouldn't be able to really comprehend and understand what's going on because these guys see the game differently. That's passing in this sense. But at the end of the day, when the game is done, what do? We go down to the stats now and say, this is what we saw. How does it line up with the stats? And that's all people are doing. And I think passing is Ray Roberts. He's Paul Moyer. He's Dave Wyman. He's all these football minds that just sees the game differently and doesn't have to look at the stats. And there's so many more opportunities for things to get right in baseball. So it's hard to ask a fan to not trip,
mm-hmm.
and not look at the strikeout percentage and to not look at the hard hit rate, to not look at the errors that are being made and say, oh, it's going to be fine, you know, because it probably will be better than what it is now. But all you have is what you're seeing and then the stats, because the average person did not play MLB baseball. Just hadn't do it. So it's a quote or a sound that I get. But I also get it from the other perspective, the fan who says, well, what am I supposed to do? Just sit here and twiddle my thumbs and say, I'm not going to look at the stat sheet. I ain't looking at the numbers. I ain't looking at the numbers. I'm just going off of what I see. But what I see is telling me that these dudes were struggling. But what we saw yesterday lets you know of the potential of this team when things are going. And Julio didn't even have a great game. Could you imagine if Julio got going? Could you imagine if JP got going?
I'm glad you mentioned, can you imagine if Julio got going? The sound I'm about to get to here, Jeff Passan, on how long he thinks the Mariners can actually sustain Julio's struggles.
Well, last May 21st, Julio was hitting .204, on base .280, slugging .376, and they survived that.
Yep.
And that was another month on top of what he's doing right now. So, you know me, I don't panic about small sample sizes, and I'm not going to do that here. Is it something that is worth continuing to follow and monitor and have those little fears in the back of your mind about? Yes. Is it worth going and making any sort of like wholesale changes to what he's doing right now? No. You just trust the talent. That's what I always say. Just trust the talent.
So according to Passan, why is it not worth worrying? Because last May, at the end of May, Julio was still struggling. He had a very slow start to the season, and he ended up having an unreal summer, most especially in August. Why is it worth being worried? Because he's your best player, and this team goes as he goes.
Yeah, and you're worried because this is your squad. This ain't passing squad. I don't even know who passing squad is. You got 30. You know what I mean? Like, it's different. Passing is able to detach emotion from the situation because he's not in this. It's his job to be analytical and be strategic with what he puts out there, and it makes complete sense. Emotion is what drives people in this region when it comes to the Mariners because of the past of this team. So, yes, I'm 100% with them. I'm with being patient with Julio. I think you and I have said that. I mean, the text lines will light us up for not being too critical on these guys right now, but I think we do hold them accountable, but maybe not in the way that the masses want us to. So, yeah, because there's emotion, because this is our team and our region, the reactions are going to be different. But he's right. There's a lot of baseball left. Hey, guys, you ready? It's still early. And they just won last night. Let's see if they can do it again tonight.
See if they can do it again tonight. And I will add a final silver lining that they have what a lot of other clubs want.
So what the Mariners have right now, unless there are drastic changes in baseball that could be coming as a result of the elbow injuries that are happening this year. There could be different rules put into place to make it such that velocity is, in terms of importance, downgraded, and going deep into games and availability is prioritized. But as long as we're on the trajectory that we are right now, this is not just the Mariners' present. This is everyone's future. This is what guys are going to train for because they understand this is what organizations are going to look for.
He's saying what the Mariners have and Gilbert, Kirby, and Miller is exactly what teams are trying to do in today's MLB. Not only are you set up, but once again, that's going to be your strength.
Yep. I mean, it's a great starting point. 5 consecutive quality starts, 3 games without anyone being walked. The bats finally got going last night. Now it's about just keep on ascending and climbing at a positive rate or at a sustainable rate. And you never know.
You're listening to Bump and Stacey on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app. Do you go offense or defense to pick number 16 for the Seahawks? That's next.
Bump and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios
on Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacey Rost.
You essentially have 2 choices unless you want to draft a kicker or a punter at pick number 16. You don't. Do you go offense or do you go defense? 866-979-3776. Let us know on the Mac and Jack's text line. Bump, you need to address the trenches on either side, and a defensive or offensive lineman would be a good pick at pick number 16. But some of our shows are split. I know, I'm going to ask you what you prefer, I can guess. I know that Mike Salk this morning talked about really wanting Jared Verse. Wyman also talked about wanting pass rushers. So they're both going defense at 16. Do you go defense or offense?
Before I give you my definitive, I'm going best available player.
Sure.
Whoever they think is the best available player, that's where you go. So what do I think? I think you got to go with that offensive line. I really do. I understand that you got Lincoln Tomlinson in. You also signed, I forgot the young Tremaine, also on that offensive line. You got your tackles coming back. You have a battle at the center position. But to me, the potential to have the best available player, I think, is going to be Troy Faltanu. If he's not there, then I think you go down the line. Jared Verse is the name that we keep hearing. I like Jared Verse. I think we highlighted him as well. I'd be fine with that. I'd be fine with Jared Verse, Troy Faltanu, or even Michael Penix now has been thrown into the mix. But I want to go offense. I want to go offensive line. And I want to go offensive line because of what I've said 1,000 times already on this show is that the offense has got to get this thing going. The offense has to be the leader when the Seahawks take the field in September. So how do you ensure that? You make sure that your quarterback is protected. I've also said this before. Geno has gotten better with his pocket presence and letting go of the football. He was not sacked as many times as he was the previous year. He's gotten better. I know you guys look at some games where he did hold on to the football. Every quarterback will hold on to the football too long at some point during this season because they're trying to buy time or they're waiting for routes to develop and the defense is doing a great job covering things up. Maybe the safety's over the top, the linebacker's underneath. You don't know what they're looking at. You know what I want fans to do? My son has the Oculus, the VR type thing, and we got this game where you are a quarterback in the pocket, and it feels real. It feels so real that the first time my son put it on, somebody blitzed, he's ducking and screaming and stuff. I go, oh, yeah, that's how hard the position is, and this ain't even real life. So I'm saying sometimes quarterbacks hold on to the football because they don't want to make a mistake or they're waiting for things to develop. Geno's gotten better at that. How do you make sure he takes another step forward? You solidify the offensive line, and you get 5 guys on that line who can get her done. Again, I ain't mad if they go defense. I ain't mad if they go Jared Verse. I ain't mad if here's the curveball. If Latu is available, most definitely. Latu is the type of player that can transform your defense, even though you got Uchenna, you got Boye, you got DT, you got Derek Hall. He's that special. I think if he's available, you go there. But I'm going offense first, man. I think it's all about the bigs. Offense got to lead the charge. You go ahead and do that. You see the way they're constructing this defense. Most of the moves have been made on defense when it comes to bringing guys in. Two linebackers, a couple safeties already. Like, that's the way that they're building this defense, and that's Mike McDonald. That's his side of the ball. It's his team, but that's his side of the ball. I'm going offense.
Nate Tice of The Athletic making the case for going with the trenches, particularly on offense.
Yeah, Ty goes to the trenches. Like, no matter what, we need to invest in that because that's going to have repercussions in a good way on the rest of our team. Whatever happens with DK, whatever happens with Lockett down the road, whatever happens with Geno down the road. All right, but we still need to build this base to launch everything else from. You know, you can't do anything, all the fun stuff, unless you have a good offensive line. Even the offensive coordinator coming from Washington, they have all these amazing receivers. Don't get me wrong. The offensive line was also fantastic with the Huskies. You can do all that fun stuff down the field when the O-line is good.
We are so used to talking about how badly this defense has been and how badly they need help and how the defensive line in particular for a team like San Francisco, Kansas City, though theirs was really more spread out with a really solid young secondary. These teams, like, that's kind of the difference that's been able to be manufactured with these teams. I am so used to naturally looking at that it is easy to overlook just how important the interior of that offensive line is just how much depth concerns you have there. I'm looking at the Mac and Jack's text line, and I can tell you right now that offensive line is not the number one answer.
No.
And that's kind of surprising to me.
It's not to me because I think people – see, what was the weakest part of this team last year?
The defense.
It was the defense.
For
so people are saying, all right, why wouldn't you address the weakest part of this team in the draft with the number 16 pick? And that logic makes complete sense to me. I'm just going the other way. I'm going the other way because I think Geno needs to be protected. I think if you want this team to be explosive, you want Ken Walker to get busy, Zach Charbonnet to get busy. Where are your weapons? What side of the ball is the most talented right now? It's the offensive side when it comes to the skills positions. I said this, man, I keep repeating myself. I said this last week. The NFL is changing. It used to be defense wins championships, offense sells tickets. Right now, the way the game is called, offense is going to win you championships. Defense are going to keep is going to keep you in the game.
Mm-hmm.
So right now, the offense needs to lead the charge and be in contention to win a championship. Will they be this year? I don't think so, but you never know. But you got to be able to put up 25, 26, 27 points on the regular. If you can hold a team to 24, 25 points, which I think the way this defense is constructed right now, they have an opportunity to, then you're good. Interior defensive lineman, I think, is the biggest need right now. The edge rushers are good. Your linebacker interiors are good. Your secondary is good. But when you look at that offensive line, you don't look across the line and say, I think they're good right now. Nah, you go and get yourself an offensive lineman. I can see an interior defensive lineman, too. I don't think anyone's wrong.
No.
It's all preference, and my preference is O-line.
I will tell you, there's a couple of answers that have quarterback, but primarily it's offensive line, defensive line. And we know the trenches are where it's at. From the 509, what did Kansas City do when they got bounced from the playoffs three seasons ago? They rebuilt their offensive line. The Seahawks need to do the same if they want to compete in one of the toughest divisions in the NFL. It's trench warfare out there. I do agree that they need to do the same, absolutely. What's tough is replicating what Kansas City did. They spent a ton of money bringing in, I believe, two free agents. Tooney was one of them, right? And then Orlando, and then drafting Creed Humphreys is a great center. So you made some impact signings and an impact draft pick within two seasons. That's hard to replicate.
Yeah, it is. And we ain't the Chiefs. We ain't the Chiefs, but yeah, great point.
All right, you guys, we are going to stick with the Seahawks in particular. Who could be a new Seahawks? So not the most popular answer, but an answer that came up nonetheless because it is the most popular position in sports, quarterback. There are a couple of you that said, look, yeah, offensive line, defensive line, all really important, but I want to have some fun. I want to get some new passers in here. I want a quarterback controversy. I want to see if they can draft their quarterback of the future. I saw y'all out there on that Mac and Jack's text line saying that, and we have two potential picks this team can make for a passer on day three. Don't go anywhere. That's next.